The hour of 10:15 have arrived. We will call the House Tax Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. So we will start out. Representative Lee moves the minutes.
Yes, sir.
Any additions or corrections? Thanks for moving the minutes. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lee. Item next, we will get right into the agenda today, and we're going to do a little bit differently. Two things. On House File 3127, normally I've been the biggest advocate of not moving things out of Tax Committee. This one, because of certain circumstances, I'm going to be asking for a voice vote to get this one out of committee to the House floor. And then we'll go 3814, 3815, 3817, and we'll kind of do them all together. We'll have maybe House Research and the author go through each one, and then we'll go to questions for the author. Then we have folks to testify that would actually like to, this will be interesting, would like to testify on each bill, and then, of course, we'll have member questions. So we have full member questions on 14, 15, and 17. So that's going to be a good day here, and then hopefully we get to Representative Whitty's House File 3186. So I will move House File 3127 be moved to the General Register. As amended. We have it as amended. And yes, Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So thank you for noting that you yourself have been one of the biggest advocates of us following the process that we always follow in Tax Committee, which is to lay bills over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. That's how we have normally done our work. You and I have built, I think, a trusting relationship, and part of that is, you know, our word meaning things. And so, you know, in 2023, the first year I was chair, in February, you talked about how you have always opposed standalone tax bills because you need ironclad agreement with the other body. If you send it separately, it's death by a thousand cuts. The other side will have a million amendments. You are a stickler about having no other tax bill except a tax bill and sometimes conformity bill. You have to be careful in Tax Committee with putting bills on the floor. And so, you know, I want us to do our work in a straightforward and serious way. And, you know, there is a serious conversation to be had about extending the PTE tax. We had a serious conversation about it last year. We've had serious conversations about it over the entire time that I've been chair. And the way that we've done that is through the normal process, which is laying bills over and having a real negotiation about them and considering not just one of the important provisions that we have in front of our committee, but, you know, a tax bill that really works for everybody. And, you know, there has not been negotiation on this with the Senate. There is not an ironclad agreement. There is not an agreement about amendments. You know, as you know, we have our kind of constitutional, duty to originate tax bills. We protect that as an institution. We protect our constitutional prerogative in the House to really exercise our authority over tax bills. And so, you know, I want us to be serious about this. I don't believe this is a serious effort, and I would urge my members to vote no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you very much, Chair Gomez. From your speech, sir, I'm very quotable.
Highly
quotable, yes. This is a diversion, no question about it, and your points, Chair Gomez, are very well taken. This issue is so time sensitive, and I don't think I'm supposed to refer to the other body, but on a 100% vote, Republicans and Democrats supported it, and there is a lot of bipartisan support. I am getting having conversation with Democrats that do want to move this forward, and I'm taking a risk here because it could be death by a thousand cuts on the House floor. That's very possible, but I hope people look at what this is. I mean, this is billions of dollars that stay in the state of Minnesota instead of sending it over to the federal government. Now, if you want Minnesota's money to go to the federal government, that's your call, and you'll have to live by that vote. I don't want to. I want this money to stay in Minnesota for Minnesotans. This is a brilliant way to do it. It has worked. I know in the past, and I know the governor's budget isn't out yet, so I can't say that they're supporting anything, but in the past, Commissioner Marquardt and Chair Marquardt have been extremely supportive of this. And I know they can't comment now because the budget's not out. I guess we'll get it to the floor and if we have the votes to do it, and I'm not assuming anything, and then we will, leadership most likely will step in, and I would hope that the four leaders, five leaders, I guess, would want to move this forward. March 15th is the tax filing date. This is beneficial to many, many, many Minnesotans. Why wouldn't we do this? So you are exactly correct, Representative Gomez. I am making exception. I don't usually do that. But I think in this case, for the sake of Minnesotans, it's well worth it. So with that, we will go into the bill. And then we'll have testifiers, members' questions. You'll get to get all the questions you'd like. And so with that backdrop, yes, I haven't done this much at all in the past, unless there is an ironclad agreement, which I do not have, let's be clear. I do not have an ironclad agreement with the other party, but this is so important to Minnesotans. And, you know, before you vote on both sides out here, call your CPA once and see what they think we should do. Okay, I'll move House File 3127. Mr. Klayman, if you could describe the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 3127, as amended, would extend the expiration date for the state's pass-through entity tax. The pass-through entity tax is an elective tax that pass-through owners can elect to file and pay at the entity level. That allows them to deduct a higher amount of state tax on their state business income tax when they file their federal return. At the state level, 100% of the tax that those pass-through entity taxpayers pay is then refunded. And so the tax at the state level is designed to be revenue neutral while providing a state business taxpayer to claim a higher federal deduction, which would be limited under the what's called the SALT cap limitation, which is a federal provision that went into effect under the TCJA that limited the amount of a taxpayer's itemized deduction for state and local taxes.
Thank you. And members, we'll spend as much time as you want to with questions and so forth, but we have heard this bill previously. We've had the testifiers. We're not going to go through all that again, but I would stand, hopefully briefly, for some member questions. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Chair Gomez, I will commit right here publicly that I will vote against any amendment on the floor that comes from my side. And you know I'm honest. So.
And Chair Gomez, we do listen to Representative Anderson.
Sure also. Thank you.
Any other comments from members? Otherwise, we'll go to a vote. I renew my motion, House File 3127. We move to the House floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. As amended. Aye. 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 Opposed?
No.
I'm going to try that again because I broke in. I didn't say as amended. So let's try that again. I will move House File 3127 be moved to the House floor as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no.
No. No.
The chair's in doubt. We will do a division. So let's, all in favor, please raise your hands. Sam, you want to count? Oh, you want to count?
Well, do you want me to count or call the name?
Call the names. No, just go through and mark them all.
He should just call the vote.
He didn't need to do it. Give up the credit. Okay, you can.
Okay, all opposed, raise your hand.
That's good.
Okay, I'm going to switch from yes to no.
Representative Robbins.
Mr. Chair.
You have ginger.
Mr. Chair, can I get a roll call?
Okay, it'd be...
The vote's in progress, Representative Torrey.
11 names.
So what is it?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Gomez.
As you know, as we all know, under the agreement for House organization for the 94th regular legislative session, adopted February 5th, 2025, the affirmative vote of a majority of all appointed committee members, excluding non-voting members, is required for a standing committee or division to report favorably on a bill or other item of committee business. You need one member of the other party in order to pass a bill, as you know. So maybe we could move on to the actual business in front of this committee instead of pursuing the games further. I have appreciated that we don't usually play those kinds of games in taxes, and instead we have serious conversations about serious issues that are facing Minnesotans. But it's very clear under the rules of this body that this is not going to go forward, so perhaps we can just actually get on with our business. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you so much, Madam Chair. The vote does not prevail. Having voted on the prevailing side, I will move that House File 3127 be brought before us and laid on the table. Okay, so with that, okay, members, I am going to And members, I apologize here. I'm going to bring House File 3127 back before us. And Representative Joy did ask for roll call,
Mr.
and I
Chair.
Didn't catch it. Madam Chair.
I'm not sure who to ask about this, but I believe that to take a bill off the table requires a vote.
Yes, it does.
And so it has to, you need a majority of the voting members of the committee to take a bill off the table, no?
That's correct.
Thank you.
So we have the motion to bring the bill off the table, and Representative Joy has asked for a roll call. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll. And a yes vote would be to bring it back before us. A no vote would be not to bring it back to us. Sorry, Chair Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to clarify, this is not a vote whether or not you support the bill. This is just a vote whether or not to bring the bill off the table. So it's not necessarily whether you support the bill or not. This is just simply that you want to have open debate on a bill that's potentially before the committee. That's
that
all, right?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you. We've already discussed this provision. We've already voted on this provision. This is a vote on whether our committee is a serious place to do the people's business or it's a political show like many other committees. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Members, I never, I couldn't lay it on the table. We didn't take a vote on laying it on the table or laid it over. So let's go. We've had a roll call asked for by Representative Joy. So the committee legislators says take roll. And the vote, members, the vote is to bring the bill back before us.
I move to recess.
Yeah, can we have a recess, Mr. Chair?
Oh, we sure can.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, we'll recess. How long do you need?
Like maybe 10 minutes.
That we will.
I just need to talk to somebody from
the Absolutely. We're in recess. We will reconvene right at 10:40.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Recess, not adjourned. Recess. I've done that before, too.
I was out looking for you because we were doing that.
I'm sorry, it took so long.
Yeah.
They were trying to get us.
I mean, they were people want to, but for a division, you don't.
Correct.
Don't call me.
You can re-bring it up. But can you do that literally today?
Did you bite it right away? I'm like, he's out there.
I voted against it.
Right.
No, no,
because you're right in front of me.
I was talking with the
provision. Yeah, yeah.
You were in
front of me.
The table. What did he say?
After the vote failed, he said it's laid over.
Yes.
Is that the same thing as what they wanted to do?
We were going to be for housing bill. We were, if it's relevant, we were asking, you know, for today for us, do we need to take? The vote had failed. We need to make the bill up. And our staff was saying, no, we just have to re.
That makes sense.
It's on the schedule. Yeah. We do it again. And so, like, I don't know if that's all Washington
County.
This is not Washington
County.
Yeah, this is
not over and
over. Yeah, Washington is not.
Well, if we're going to throw the rule book, the Freeman out, like, Melissa would always say, like,
those aren't mine.
If you don't adhere to these rules, like,
try him on, maybe.
One side.
No.
Try him on.
Not everybody can get away.
At least these three. We're just going to have staff. Especially after this drama. It's killing all our
There's...
Right, but so they didn't...
Actually, did this morning.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm assuming the data
Yeah, I know.
You know, is it worth that? I mean, that's the whole, you know what I mean?
But when do we...
Especially after...
Oh, the bonus? I mean, excuse me.
His bitches. But I mean, like, we're nicer than they are. Well, I think we are not backing down. If we want to have omnibus bills, we're not.
Yeah, we're not.
But then nothing gets done.
That's the other thing. Yeah, nothing gets done.
Because I think they're going to get
there. And I'll bet we could also...
Socialist utopia.
I've heard them talk about it.
Yeah. That Walls, is that his fraud plan we've been waiting on? I mean, the thing he did yesterday? It's a horrible... It's just a joke. Yeah, we need the tax. That was part. Okay, that's it. The rest of it is just... I mean, you saw it, right? It's horrible.
I don't know if it comes up.
No, I think you're right. Mine,
and it's not going to do a thing.
I think so.
Well, I'm going to get my husband just in a tizzy. I mean, And then you get the scanner.
The hour of 10:40 having arrived, we'll reconvene the tax committee. And we did a little research here, and the bill is actually in front of us because there's no vote to table the bill. So the House File 3127 is before us. Representative Gomez, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad you realize that to put a vote on the table requires an affirmative vote by the committee. That did not happen. What you did effectively was to lay the bill over yet again. As you likely know, on a committee, unlike on the floor, you don't need to be on the prevailing side to move to reconsider a vote. So you're welcome to move to reconsider the vote, I guess, for the rest of the committee if you'd like to. Although, as you are aware, as everyone's aware, we've already voted on this provision. It did not prevail. So I guess it's up to you about how you'd like to use the rest of our time together today, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Right. Okay, members, the bill is laid over, but I'm going to bring it back before the committee. So the bill is before us, House File 3127, as amended. Representative Joy.
I move that we move this to the, make the motion to move this to the General Register and ask for a roll call vote.
Representative Joy has made a motion to move to the General Register, has asked for a roll call vote. The committee legislative assistant will take the vote.
Mr. Chair?
Take the roll. Oh, before we take the roll, Chair Gomez.
I'm just wondering if we have to move to reconsider the vote.
No, we don't.
We have to vote to on a motion to reconsider the bill that we just voted down.
No, I can bring it back before us.
Could I ask Mr. Klayman if that is accurate? Because I'm a little bit, it's a little bit, you know, like some things have happened here today that are not in alignment with like the way that we do business. So I just feel the need to kind of check along the way with our professional staff if possible.
And I do appreciate that. I am in very unfamiliar territory for tax committee because you are exactly correct. So the committee legislative assistant will take the role.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask Mr. Klayman on whether this requires a vote to reconsider?
No, I think we need to ask. I don't want to bring nonpartisan staff into this. I won't do that. Who could
the recess?
What'd you say?
Another recess?
I mean, we could take another recess, yeah. Mr. Chair, but...
Yeah. The bill is in front of us because I didn't properly, we didn't table it, I laid it over. So members, the Community Legislative Assistant will take the vote or take the roll.
Davids.
Aye.
Gomez.
No.
Joy.
Aye.
Norris.
No.
Egbaje.
No.
Anderson.
Aye.
Elkins.
No.
Freiberg.
No.
Harder.
Aye.
Hollins.
No.
Howard.
No.
Hewitt.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kozlowski.
No.
Lee.
No.
Roach.
Aye.
Robbins.
Aye.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Smith.
No.
Wodinski.
Aye.
Weerwas.
Aye.
Wiener.
Aye.
Witte.
Aye.
Joachim.
No.
Okay, members, we'll get the totals here. The vote is 12 in the affirmative, 12 in the negative. The motion does not prevail. We will now go to House File 3814. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to apologize for being late. I was with constituents in the hallway. But I just have a clarifying question, though. I'm kind of a little confused. I got filled in on all this, but I don't think we've always sent a tax conformity package to the floor, and I know how difficult it can be to send a tax bill to the floor without any resolution on funding constraints, if we're going to have targets, and you know, as a chair myself, I wouldn't want to let go of the control over that bill. So I just am a little confused about the rush to send this to the floor without having a fuller discussion on conformity as a whole in committee.
Thank you very much, Chair Joachim. This is not a conformity bill from HR 1. This is should have been done, in my opinion, last year. I mean, one of the articles I read said it's a no-brainer. Why in the world aren't we doing this? But that's not the case now. And I did, before you were here, I gave the reasons where this is very abnormal. This is not the way we usually do it. But there's a March 15th deadline. And I would just suggest you call your CPA and ask your CPA what he or she thinks. I really would. I'm serious. Because they're saying, what are you people doing? And so that's where we're at. So we're going to move on. I'm going to lay the bill over as amended. So now, Representative Anderson, House File 3814. And members, let's do some more stuff we don't usually do. Let's put these three bills before us and we'll go each one with a description of it. And then we'll ask the author questions. And then we will have everyone that has the ability to testify. Then we can question the testifiers. Then we'll go into member questions and you just suggest which bill. So can you get more than one bill? We'll just do one at a time. Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, so actually, members, we're going to move House File 3814, so that's before us. I would like nonpartisan staff to describe the bill, and then, or do you want to do it, Representative Anderson?
Go ahead.
Okay, nonpartisan, who has this one for Section 179? That's Mr. Klayman, if you could describe the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 3814 would selectively conform to the federal changes in Section 179 expensing. Federal OBA bill increased the total dollar limit on the Section 179 deduction and also increased what's called the investment limit, after which the amount of the Section 179 deduction is reduced dollar for dollar for amounts above that limit.
Thank you. Questions of the author? Okay. Now we will have, I lay that over. I'm learning about laying stuff over. We'll go to House File 3815. Who from nonpartisan could describe that? Mr. Klayman? And some of these are quite similar.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 3815 would selectively conform to the federal changes in OBA to the business interest deduction. There were three changes under OBA. One, the main change was the modification of how the limit on business interest deduction is calculated with reference to adjusted taxable income. The federal changes would allow a higher limit for that deduction. In addition, the business interest changes federally also increase the amount of the limit by allowing certain floor plan financing interest for campers and trailers to be included in the calculation of adjusted taxable income. And then there were some other, actually there were more than three, there were some other changes related to how the business interest deduction interacts with capitalization rules for interest. And there were also some modifications to the calculation of adjusted taxable income for purposes of determining the limit related to excluding certain income from controlled foreign corporations. And for this provision and for the Section 179 provision, those would be effective retroactively to tax year 2025.
Okay, thank you. Questions of the author. May we do the next one? Then we will have testimony. The members, you'll have all the time for questions that you would like. So I'll lead that one over. House File 3017. Mr. Klayman, are you on that one? Okay, please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 3817 would conform to the federal changes for 100% bonus depreciation. OBA increased the percentage of a property's basis that was allowed a 100%, or that was allowed a deduction up to 100%. That's a first-year deduction. One note on this one is that under state law, there is a five-year add-back for amounts allowed federally under bonus depreciation. And so this bill wouldn't change the state add-back, but would conform to the higher federal limits under OBA.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Otherwise, we'll go to testifiers. I have three. Number one, first will be Brian Cook, then John Boshi, NFIB, then Dalton Danielson. And then if they could kind of go through their testimony, stick around. So if any members have questions of any of those three, we do not want to limit questions in any way. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thanks, Chair Davids, Co-Chair Gomez, members of the House Taxes Committee. Good morning. My name is Brian Cook. I'm the Director of Tax, Fiscal Policy, and Elections for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Chamber represents more than 6,300 businesses of all sizes in all corners of the state with more than 500,000 employees. Our organization is also part of the Invest in Minnesota Coalition, which is comprised of 20 trade associations and 67 local chambers of commerce, which support efforts to conform state tax law to H.R. 1, the federal tax bill passed in 2025. I think you should have a handout from the coalition in your packets. Appreciate the opportunity to speak in favor of Representative Anderson's House Files 3814, 3815, and 3817. To start with generally, the Chamber is supportive of doing as much mechanical conformity as possible to increase Minnesota's tax competitiveness. All states are essentially looking at the same federal tax provisions right now, and we don't want Minnesota businesses at a disadvantage compared to the other states that automatically conform to federal law or considering doing so this year. The bills we're discussing today have significant economy-wide impact. In particular, Section 179, bonus depreciation, and R&E expensing benefit Minnesota-based businesses that invest in their property and operations, advancing economic growth in our state. Start off with House File 3814 on Section 179 conformity would increase the maximum deduction that is available for business equipment purchases. Think of manufacturing equipment, agricultural implements, office furniture. That limit would go from 1.25 million to 2.5 million and raises the phase out threshold from around $3 million to $4 million. Through the phase out mechanism, Section 179 primarily benefits small and medium sized businesses. While it may not be the perfect way of measuring business size, looking at the impacts of the individual income tax versus the corporate franchise tax can at least give a little bit of insight. Over 70% of the revenue reduction in the Department of Revenue's revenue analysis goes to the individual income tax, which indicates the benefit likely primarily goes to those small and medium-sized businesses. House File 3815 would conform the state to the new federal changes on the business interest limit. As we heard before, there are a number of changes, but primarily it would change the calculation from earnings before interest and taxation EBIT to earnings before interest, taxation, depreciation, and amortization, which I think you would EBITDA. This creates a higher adjusted taxable income for the purposes of the 30% limit on business interest. Conforming here increases the tax benefit for companies that utilize loans to invest in their business operations. Like with Section 179, over 80% of the tax impacts are in the individual income tax, suggesting a greater benefit to smaller and medium-sized businesses. Finally, for House File 3817, conforming to the new federal changes on bonus depreciation would be another incentive for business investment. As part of H.R. 1, the federal government has returned to 100% bonus depreciation on qualified tangible property, such as machinery and equipment, as opposed to the previously scheduled phase down, which eventually reaches 0%. Minnesota law at a basic level allows for 20% of the federal amount through add-backs and future subtractions, which leads to bonus depreciation tracking as a revenue increase in this current budget horizon. Conforming would also allow the state, like the federal government, to expand eligibility for bonus depreciation to new manufacturing structures. As the state's manufacturing association, we strongly support this new provision to incentivize manufacturing growth in our state. Thanks again to Representative Anderson for carrying these bills. We're hopeful that the committee can support a conformity package that provides these benefits to the businesses who are investing in their Minnesota operations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Questions for Mr. Cook? And Mr. Cook, can you stick around if I need to call you back? Okay, let's go to Mr. John Boshi, State Director, NFIB. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and present your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Davids, Chair Gomez, members of the committee. My name is John Boshi. I'm the State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Minnesota. I'm here today to speak specifically to House File 3814 and 3817. NFIB represents over 10,000 small, independently owned businesses throughout Minnesota, and our mission is to promote and protect the rights of our members to own, operate, and grow their business. NFIB supports House File 3814, which would conform Minnesota's tax code to the increased deduction limit under Section 179 that was passed in the federal tax bill. This provision allows small businesses to deduct the full cost of qualifying equipment or property in the year it is purchased, improving business cash flow by allowing businesses to recover costs in the year the investments are made rather than over multi-year depreciation schedules. This provides for a more accurate representation of annual business expenses and profits. It also frees up cash flow, reduces the cost of capital, and encourages small businesses to reinvest in their operations. The changes in the federal tax bill increased the Section 179 deduction to $2.5 million, with a phase-out that limits this deduction to small and mid-sized businesses. By conforming to this change, small businesses in Minnesota will be able to benefit from increased liquidity, which enables them to reinvest, hire, and grow. NFIB also supports House File 3817, which seeks to conform Minnesota's tax code to the federal changes to bonus depreciation, which, as previously mentioned, was permanently restored for qualified property. We think this is another great provision that will allow Minnesota businesses to get the full effect of deducting their property, and that it is valuable due to the time value of money and will also improve cash flow for businesses. In both instances, conforming with these changes to federal tax law will have the additional benefit of providing small businesses with greater tax certainty, will simplify filing, and will reduce compliance costs. It will also provide our members and all Minnesota small businesses with confidence and allow them to focus their time on building their businesses rather than navigating nonconformity. So thank you again for the opportunity to provide comments, and we respectfully ask the committee to support these bills. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boshi. Any questions for Mr. Boshi? And would you be able to stick around for the rest of the committee? Thank you very much. So if we have questions, we will go back to him. And members, if I could just note while Mr. Danielson's coming to the table here, the Witte bill is actually 3816, not 3186. So 3816, just that's the one we'll be bringing up for Representative Witte. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Awesome. Good morning, everyone. My name is Dalton Danielson, Fiscal Policy Director with the Minnesota Business Partnership.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. The Minnesota Business Partnership is an association of CEOs and senior executives from Minnesota's most innovative and respected large companies. The partnership represents state, regional, and global leaders in healthcare, med tech, agriculture, manufacturing, financial services, and more. Statewide, our members employ 1 in 6 Minnesotans. The Chamber and NFIB did a great job of running through specifics. I would like to talk today broadly about the impact of tax conformity in Minnesota. So tax conformity is a priority for the partnership and our members. We strongly support House File 3814, 3815, and 3817 because together they address a much larger question facing Minnesota's business community. Does our tax system support growth and investment, or does it add uncertainty and friction? For our members, tax conformity and overall tax structure plays a critical role when deciding where to invest capital, locate jobs, or expand operations. When Minnesota decouples from federal tax law, businesses are forced to operate under two different tax systems with different definitions, different timing rules, and different compliance requirements that increases administrative costs, complicates planning, and raises the effective cost of doing business in Minnesota compared to other states that conform fully. These bills reduce that friction. They move Minnesota closer to the federal tax base that businesses already use for budgeting, financing, and investment decisions nationwide. That alignment matters most for capital-intensive and growth-oriented employers, the very companies that drive high-wage jobs and long-term economic growth here in Minnesota. From the MVP perspective, conformity has three broader impacts. First, it improves Minnesota's competitiveness for capital investments. Companies compare states when deciding where to place new equipment, facilities, or technology. When Minnesota's tax treatment lags behind federal law, it tilts decisions away from the state, often in ways that are invisible but consequential. And more often than not, what follows this investment? Jobs. As I mentioned, high-paying, high-skill jobs. Second, conformity frees up capital for reinvestment, allowing companies to reinvest here in Minnesota in emerging markets, in emerging technology, in emerging labor. Finally, it reduces uncertainty. As I mentioned, businesses need stable rules to plan multi-year investments. Nonconformity injects uncertainty into financial models and increases the risk associated with investing in Minnesota. These bills do not create special preferences. They do not pick winners or losers. Instead, they prevent Minnesota from becoming a tax outlier. For MVP members and the broader business community, federal tax conformity is about keeping Minnesota competitive, predictable, and most importantly, open for investment. For those reasons, we respectfully urge you to support these three bills, and we'll stay for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Danielson. Questions of the author or of the three testifiers? Okay. Would you like to wrap it up, Representative Anderson?
No, that's good. That was easy. thank you.
Okay. So Representative Anderson moves House File 3814 be laid over. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
We don't vote on... Mr. Chair?
Oh, yes, Chair Gomez?
We don't vote on laying things over.
Okay. I will move... Representative Anderson moves House File 3814 be laid over. So we will lay that over. House File 3815 be laid over. We will lay that over. House File 3817 be laid over.
Mr. Chair.
Lay it over.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Lee.
Are we not doing member discussion on these bills?
Yeah, we opened up for the member discussion. Okay. Nobody said anything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I didn't have questions for the testifiers. Yeah, you said, are there questions for the testifiers?
Okay. So we're going to talk about some laid over bills now.
Okay.
Representative Lee, who would you like to ask a question to?
Yeah, no, so I don't have questions for the testifiers,
you,
but I
you
thought.
You are correct.
Yeah.
You are correct.
I thought we were going to have member discussion on this.
Like to ask questions of the author or the three testifiers?
Yeah, so I actually have a question for fiscal staff on 3817.
Certainly. Okay, let's look at 3817. Please ask your question to Ms. Templer.
Yeah, so thank you, Chair. This is a question because I was looking at the revenue note for 3817, and it looks like this is potentially a revenue raiser, which is potentially a good thing. But I wanted to just better understand, this revenue note only goes out to fiscal year 2029. What would this actually look like in the tails if we extend this out and we're not really doing this kind of like weird upfront depreciation thing?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lee, yes, the revenue estimate shows a positive fiscal impact to the general fund in fiscal 27 through fiscal 29, which is the budget forecast window. I did anticipate this question about the fiscal impact of these expensing provisions, and many of these provisions will show, for example, bonus depreciation shows to be, it is a revenue raiser in the budget window, but because of the timing of the deductions, these expensing provisions often turn to cost in later years, but then eventually net out or get close to netting out over, you know, a number of years during the period of expensing. And for this specific provision, I did reach out to the Department of Revenue and asked if they could give me an estimate of when this turns negative, this the bonus depreciation expensing. And they did reply back that their estimates are showing that it turns negative after fiscal 29, which means there's a cost for this provision, but then again, it nets out over a number of years.
Representative Lee.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So, no, I really appreciated that response from Ms. Templin. You know, my concern is, right, like our revenue note captures only the impact of this, you know, to fiscal year 2029. And so, you know, when we're thinking about making these really expensive conformity decisions, right, it's also thinking about, you know, what are we having our children and grandchildren pay for? You know, it looks like we're asking them to pay for this later or pay for these really expensive corporate tax breaks. And so I just want folks to understand the impact of that.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Chair Gomez.
Thank you.
To this question, Representative Anderson, then to Chair Gomez. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. And to follow up on that, can we ask fiscal staff, because some of these that are negative actually turn positive in the outlying years. Can you maybe give an explanation
Ms.
of that?
Ms. Templin.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that's correct. There's, you know, because of the timing of the deductions and the differences of the proposal compared to current law, there are some provisions that do show up as a cost in the budget forecast window, but then turn to a positive outside the budget forecast window. Extrapolating kind of the cost outside the budget window is hard to do, so it is, of course, speculative. So we don't have, like, firm estimates from the Department of Revenue, but it's, you know, just a very rough idea of kind of the fiscal impact over the long term.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Just, you know, a point that eventually these will net to zero, generally. And so it's a matter of when things are written off, when things are, you know, for a business. So some of these, again, have, you know, in the budget window, they show a positive to the state. Some show a negative. They're going to flip, you know, down the road. So it's really an accounting issue. And, you know, the question is, do we want our businesses to have essentially two sets of books? And if we don't conform, that's what you're going to force companies into. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a lot of these provisions, I mean, it's interesting that today we've been told to call our CPAs to ask them for advice about what we should do as policymakers in this committee. Because most taxpayers in Minnesota don't have CPAs to call. The interests that are well represented in this room and at this table year after year do have CPAs to call. And what we see in front of us is, you know, an assortment of corporate tax breaks, some of which are new, some of which are continuations from 2017, some of which are designed to be layered, one on top of the other, on top of the other, on top of the other, and coupled with the dramatic decrease in the corporate tax rate at the federal level in the 2017 TCJA, which was made permanent, or actually that provision was permanent, but this is making permanent many of those sort of giveaways to what are just the largest corporations in the world, almost all multi-state, almost all multinational. And so the question before us, the taxpayers of Minnesota already spend hundreds of millions of public dollars. Go take a look at the tax expenditure budget, conforming with a number of these federal expensing provisions. And so the question before us is, are we going to spend hundreds of millions of additional public dollars to extend and sweeten those corporate tax breaks, which result in many corporations, the largest, most profitable corporations in our country, many of which are the largest and most profitable corporations that have ever existed in the history of mankind, having zero federal tax liability? These decisions that we make are a reflection of that, of generations of federal tax law being tilted in favor of these entities and away from the interests of working people, away from the interests of middle-class families. And so these decisions that we make to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, that's, again, you know, we talk about them in, you know, it's just conformity, it's simplicity, it's making things predictable, it's making things competitive, you know, and that is one consideration. But the other consideration is all of the other things we've been talking about. Our conversation with the counties about the implications of the non-tax components of HR1, which were in part designed to offset some of these huge giveaways to corporations, in part, right? Because we also are adding to the deficit majorly. And we also are, you know, cutting human beings off of healthcare so that we can do these things. So we just have to keep all of that in mind. And obviously the conformity conversation will move forward. But, you know, the question is, are we working for the people who have all the, who have an entire accounting department full of CPAs to advise them and help them to, you know, advantage themselves? Or are we working for the parents and families in our communities who are relying on their VitaSites and TurboTax to figure out how to get their tax bill right and are trying to figure out every month how to make their bills? Who do we work for? Do we work for the people with accountants or not? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Gomez. Let's go to the gentleman from Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just reminding members in the committee here, you know, we've had it in the past, and maybe we could bring it back again, but we've had, you know, nonpartisan staff from present about tax incident studies. And, you know, when business or corporations do pay taxes, they don't necessarily pay taxes. Corporations are largely tax collectors. And so, you know, as any expense within business, whether it's fuel, whether it's rent, whether it's property taxes, by and large, but nonpartisan tax incident studies have done the research that almost all costs, 90 to 95% of costs of doing business, whether it's federal tax, state tax, property tax, fuel, energy, employee, earn sick and safe time, ultimately get passed down to the consumer. And so whether or not you want to make that point, whether or not this is about consumer or lowering costs, at end of the day, this becomes about our ability to compete on an international, even a regional level, whether we're competing against North Dakota, if you're a border community, whether it's South Dakota, whether it's Iowa, whether it's Wisconsin, when it comes to energy, when it comes to job, when it comes to the ability to attract workers, when it comes to compete in the products that we sell, like those are all some of those considerations. And just when we're having these conversations about tax and our responsibility to pay them, we also understand that who actually pays those taxes when those taxes are passed on as a cost of doing business. And the more attractive we are as a state, the more ability that we'll have to attract businesses to our state, to create jobs, to be efficient, to build things. We can't all work for government. At some point, someone's going to pay the bill. And, you know, it would be my encouragement that, you know, as we're considering these bills, thank you, Representative Anderson, for carrying these, that we're looking at, you know, what is the actual cost of doing business in Minnesota? You know, if we're seeing an exodus of 1,100 jobs from areas of our state, we should be looking at what are the circumstances, what is the environment that is causing businesses to make those moves? Is it because maybe the employees don't want to go there anymore? Is it an unfriendly place to do business? I mean, whether it's Minneapolis to the suburbs or the suburbs to Hudson, Wisconsin. We need to be thinking about how we are presenting ourselves as legislators and as businessmen and decision makers in our state and say, you know what? Are folks more likely to make a decision when it comes to doing business in our state because of the attitude that we have towards them? Right? We all go fishing, right? And we all understand when we go fishing, we put a hook on the end of the line, right? And that hook will either attract or detract. If we put a bare hook out there, not a lot of fish are going to bite. But we need to put something nice and shiny and good and some positive. That's whether it's the employees that we have within the state, whether it's the tax incentives we have to attract, right? And there are some hooks, right? Anyone will agree that if you do business in any state, there are hooks that are going to capture you. Whether you build foundation, create and build, there are going to be some parts of that. But we also have to be reasonable, because if there's five hooks in the water, you know, which one is that fish going to choose? Which business or which state is that business going to choose? And we have to be adaptive. We have to be willing to attract. And if we continually throw out bait that nobody wants to bite on, sooner or later, we're going to realize that we're going to be real hungry. And that would be as we're talking, as we're thinking, as we're contemplating these bills, that, you know, we have an ability to go fishing. Let's start attracting with some good bait. Thank you. I have a bill for that, too, two lines, House File 624 in the Environment Committee, two lines for fishing. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Swizinski, for reminding us about who pays the taxes when the tax incentive study has clearly shown for years that it's passed on to the consumers. But my point that I wanted to make, Mr. Chair, was, you know, Chair Gomez argued her view articulately about wanting to fight for the small businesses and the little guys, and this seems, in her view of it, to just accrue to the large, wealthy corporations. And I would just like to point out for the body and for the public that our friends on the other side just voted down the pass-through entity tax, which was no cost to the budget and which would absolutely accrue to small businesses, who are begging us to get this done. So if you want to help the small businesses, the small individual owners who are struggling to keep their businesses afloat, members, we could do it by passing the pass-through entity tax. There's no cost to the budget. This is the biggest no-brainer I think this legislature has seen. I hope that we can come to true bipartisan agreement on this, and I encourage you to reconsider that. So thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing these bills. But members, we have a solution that will help small and medium businesses with the pass-through entity tax that was voted down a few minutes ago. So we need to reconsider that.
Excuse me, Chair Gomez.
What bill are we considering right now?
I'm not really sure.
Perhaps if we...
I think
perhaps if we were taking our work seriously in committee, if we were, you know, going under the normal order of business, if we were showing up to committee on time, then we could give our speeches about the bills during the time when they are being discussed.
We had members from both parties, one from your party that missed my brilliant introduction.
For loss.
I agree. I'm with you on that. So, listen, we've got two more, then we've got another bill with a whole bunch of testifiers that will get their testimony cut in about half, so be working on that. Representative Lee, then Hollins, then we're moving on. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me for a second time. I wanted to just make a clarification to say the revenue notes are very good, and we should rely on them, and they are accurate. This is how we do our work here. But also did want to, you know, just make a pitch that, you know, these three bills before us, you know, when you look at the revenue notes, you know, some of them raise revenues and two of them actually, you know, are really, really expensive. And so my piece is this is why, right, like we should have a uniform omnibus tax bill to think about the full impact of the tax decisions that we make in this body for, you know, Minnesotans across the state. And so that's just, you know, one thing that I wanted to clarify, that the revenue notes are resources that we should all use, and the good people at the Department of Revenue do a really good job with that. The second piece is, you know, there was talk about tax incident studies, but want to just, you know, make the point that these bills, you know, also help multinational, multi-state corporations, and we want to make sure that, you know, if we want to make sure that Minnesota money stays in Minnesota and it's invested here, that, you know, we have to have, again, a thoughtful tax policy strategy to make sure that we're actually supporting Minnesotans. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sort of in the same vein as Representative Lee just said, you know, I'm looking at a table right now of the index ranks and component tax ranks of the best state business tax climates, and Wyoming ranks number one. And I also looked up how many Fortune 500 companies are in Wyoming, and the answer is zero. And that's because we have to look out for companies, but we also have to look out for people, because companies don't function without human beings. And so when we're talking about this, I think it actually is really incumbent upon us to think about what trade-offs we're making for businesses and human beings. Because human beings are in Minnesota because of the things that we have passed, because of the trade-offs that we're willing to make to take care of them, to make sure that they have time to spend with their babies, to make sure that they have health care, to make sure that they are able to be in green spaces. And when we do the calculation that Chair Swazinski was talking about, when we make that internal calculation, we have to find a balance. It's not good enough to just say we're going to make the climate as good as possible for businesses, because clearly Wyoming has done that, and they have nothing to show for it, right? We are taking care of the people of Minnesota, which make businesses function. And I can tell you, because I used to work in the legal sector, finding lawyers to go to certain parts of Minnesota is really difficult because they don't have schools and they don't have parks and they don't have things that human beings want, right? They might have a business, but if there's nothing there to support a family, to support a human being, it actually doesn't make a difference, because they will sacrifice that to be in a place that actually supports them as a family and as a human being. And so I think as we move forward, it's important that we don't just think that people will flock to wherever businesses are. They won't. They need things as humans, and we are here to make those calculations, literally and figuratively, about how to improve people's lives and not just businesses, you know, the bottom line for businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Two things, members. One is we do have the new tax incentive study, I do believe, and I'll be talking to Chair Gomez about how we can present that to the committee if that's okay. Okay, and then also I haven't asked the department if they wanted to testify on anything right here.
You don't want to get up here?
Really? Smart department. Smart department. Okay, so do you want to wrap it up? Okay, thank you very much, Representative Anderson. Okay, item next. Representative Whitty, if you could go to the table there. And we have House file and members. It's not 3186. It's on our agenda, 3816. So let's go to House file 3816. If you could present your bill, please, Representative Whitty. Or would you like nonpartisan to go over it, or would you like to present it?
Thank you, Chair. I'll just make an opening comment, and then I will have nonpartisan kind of go over the rest of the bill. Thank you, committee members. House File 3816 updates Minnesota tax laws to conform with federal law allowing full expensing of domestic research and experimental costs, ensuring Minnesota businesses receive the same tax treatment at the state level as they do federal. The R&D credit does three things. It creates and retains jobs, it increases research activity, and it is attracts and retains businesses. And then if nonpartisan want to go over any of the finer details.
Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 3816 would selectively conform to the federal changes for the deduction for research and experimental expenditures. There are three components of the federal changes. There's a provision that allows expensing of these expenditures going forward, and that moves from 5-year amortization period for taking those deductions to expensing in the year that they're incurred. Secondly, for businesses that pass the federal gross receipts test, so these would be businesses that have a lower amount of gross receipts, they can retroactively apply those expensing provisions back to tax year 2022. And then the third component of the federal changes is that for taxpayers who are currently paying on the five-year schedule and have some time left for that, they can actually take whatever amounts haven't been deducted. So these are called unamortized amounts under federal law, and they can claim that deduction in with the remaining amount of that deduction in one lump sum, either in tax year 2025 retroactively or in equal shares in tax year 25 and 26.
Okay, thank you very much. And with that, we will get into testimony to House File 3816, the Witte Bill. We're going to start off with Alex Marcus. And then we'll go to Brian Cook, John Besche, Dalton Danielson, Gary Borsheim, Chris Powers. Then we'll go to questions of the author or nonpartisan or the witnesses. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Name is Alex Marcus, and I'm representing Dame Stainless. Thank you, Chair David and Gomez and the other committee members. We are a equipment manufacturer based in New London, Minnesota. So thank you for the opportunity to be here today and support in aligning Minnesota's tax code with the federal changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, particularly regarding the restoration of immediate expensing for research and development costs. We design, manufacture, install, and automate stainless steel process equipment for food and ingredients industries. We're a small business, but we compete on a global stage against much larger multinational corporations. We've had a great reputation in the industry and have been growing, about doubling our headcount over the last 5 years to approximately 120 people, nearly all of whom live and work in Minnesota. I'm happy to share that during this period, we've also been able to increase our wages by roughly 50% over that five-year period on a job-for-job basis, so we're increasing pay for our employees as well. And we've even started an apprenticeship program for high school graduates to teach them valuable skills of stainless TIG welding to grow the industry in Minnesota. We have roughly 50 welders, and the rest are, you know, engineers, about 40 engineers and designers, and the rest admin. We also hold two patents that we've been able to generate from the research and development that we've done over the years. Our growth has created these good-paying jobs in rural communities and contributed to the state's economy through wages, local spending, and innovation in food processing technologies. It's important to note, I think, two of our main competitors are across the border in Wisconsin, in Marshfield and Hudson, and Wisconsin's already standardizing on the one-year deduction for all research and development expenditures. So, so we're competing uphill against those competitors. We're highly capital-intensive business and highly technical. We demand constant improvements to our equipment and to our operations to stay competitive. We have a R&D facility. That's where we use to develop our new technologies and host customers in the industry to conduct their own product research. And we're currently adding on to that facility, and hopefully it'll be operational by the end of the year. We continue to plan to continue expanding by adding on to our shop and our R&D center capabilities. And under current Minnesota law, unfortunately, we are penalized by these R&D investments because it creates a huge cash strain on our company due to requiring to amortize these over a five-year period instead of being able to deduct them immediately. And at this point, with the bill change at the federal level, our cash requirements for taxes actually exceed our federal obligations. It ties up valuable working capital, it strains our resources, and limits our ability to reinvest in growth, innovation, and our workforce. And aligning with the federal provision would provide immediately relief, freeing up capital to fuel expansion and job creation within Minnesota. It's not a tax cut, it's simply taking the cash and when we pay it out on a year-to-year basis, and it allow, if we were able to expense in the year that we made the investments, it would allow us to do more of it and do it at a faster rate. So I urge you to support conformity legislation like HF 3817 to restore immediate R&D expensing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for the witness? And where did you drive in from?
New London, Minnesota, about 2 hours west.
New London Spicer?
Yep.
By Wilmer?
Yep.
Wilmer Cardinals? What's New London Spicer?
Wildcats.
Wildcats. Okay. I should have known that. Okay, thank you very much. If you could stick around a little bit, if there's questions, we'll bring you back. Mr. Cook.
Thanks, Chair Davids, members of the House Taxes Committee. My name is still Brian Cook, still the Director of Tax Fiscal Policy Elections for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Chamber represents more than 6,300 businesses of all sizes, all corners of the state, more than 500,000 employees. Appreciate the opportunity to share our support for Representative Woody's House File 3816, which would bring the state into conformity with the federal government's changes to research and experimentation expensing under Section 174. I'd also like to draw your attention again to the handout provided by the Invest in Minnesota Coalition. At its simple level, the key part of the proposal would allow for businesses to immediately deduct their research and experimentation expenses as opposed to amortizing them over 5 years. Prior to the implementation of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, R&E expensing at the federal and state level has traditionally been immediate. H.R. 1 reverses this provision, allowing businesses to fully realize their expenses in the year in which they occur. The impacts of the change are meaningful for businesses and their employees. Amortizing these costs impacts business investment, can negatively affect cash flow. For example, a November 2025 paper out of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School titled The Labor Consequences of R&D Tax Capitalization found, and I'll quote from them a little bit here, a significant decrease in R&D employment at affected firms, and that the decrease is concentrated in relatively lower skilled R&D workers. These results are consistent with the idea that firms alter their employment decisions in response to the R&D capitalization rule. They also suggest that the increased tax burden posed by the new rule is passed down to lower-level R&D workers. While our analysis indicate that in the short term, firms respond to the tax rule change by reducing their employment of lower-level employees, they may have to cut more senior positions in the long term, thereby hurting their accumulation of human capital and firm long-term growth. And I'll just say this paper bears out what we hear from our members and, frankly, the testimony we just heard. I do want to note that we are acknowledging the significant cost that Section 174 conformity carries in the short term. We're happy to work with the committee, Department of Revenue, to find a workable solution within a larger conformity framework that fits within the state's budget constraints. Thanks for your consideration this morning.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cook. Any questions for members? For Mr. Cook? Okay, thank you. And if you could stick around, that'd be great. We'll go to John Beshe, Dalton Danielson, Gavin Borsheim. Mr. Beshe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, my name is John Beshe. I'm State Director for NFIB here in Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some comments in support of House File 3816. NFIB supports this bill, which seeks to conform Minnesota's tax code to changes that the federal tax code recently made to research and experimentation expensing provisions. As Mr. Cook mentioned, prior to 2022, businesses were allowed to immediately deduct these expenses in the year that those expenses occurred, freeing up capital for operational needs and job creation. Since then, businesses have been required to spread this deduction over 5 years, leading to a higher tax burden for businesses investing in R&E, particularly for small businesses that are research intensive and not yet profitable. The federal tax bill returns to the pre-2022 standard by permitting businesses to take an immediate deduction of R&E expenses, once again freeing up capital for small businesses. By conforming to the federal changes related to this expensing, Minnesota will allow small businesses to immediately deduct these expenses and will provide them with an opportunity to improve, upgrade, and innovate new products and services. I think Mr. Marcus earlier provided a great example of how that works in real life for a business. Once again, conforming to these changes will also provide small businesses in Minnesota with greater tax certainty, simplify filing, and will reduce compliance costs, and will give them the confidence they need to focus their time on building their business, hiring, rather than navigating nonconformity. So thank you once again for the opportunity to provide comments, and we respectfully ask the committee to support House File 3816 and preserve this option for Minnesota's small businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Beshe at this time? Okay, let's go to Dalton Danielson, then Gavin Borsheim, and then Chris Powers. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Dalton Danielson, Fiscal Policy Director with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and thank you for Representative Witte for carrying this bill. We strongly support House File 3816 because it restores tax certainty and competitiveness for Minnesota employers that invest heavily in research and development. This bill aligns Minnesota tax law with recent federal changes that allow immediate expensing of domestic R&D costs rather than forcing businesses to spread those costs over several years. Nothing you all haven't heard before. But for our members, R&D is not theoretical. It means high-wage jobs, long-term capital investment, and innovation that keeps Minnesota competitive in industries when other states and other countries are actively courting these investments. I'll reiterate for the committee, the competition for investments and the competition for business right now is not regional, it is not national, it is global. House File 3816 restores parity with federal law and ensures that Minnesota's tax code does not penalize companies for investing in research, workers, and productivity here in Minnesota. On behalf of MBP and our members, again, we would like to thank Representative Witte and the committee for hearing this bill today, and we urge its support moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Danielson? Okay, let's go on to Mr. Gavin Borsheim. Okay, if that's the way he's going to be. Let's go to Chris Powers, CPAs. And then we'll have Representative Witte wrap it up, member questions. Representative Witte wrap it up, and then we'll go to Chair Gomez for tomorrow. Or anything else. Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Powers, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Society of CPAs. Minnesota Society of CPAs is a professional association with 7,500 members. And when we come to the Capitol, we represent thousands of clients who are individuals and family businesses. I am a CPA. I was here last week, if you do recall me. I've been in public practice for 27 years. I am an owner of our CPA firm, Abdo. We have offices in Mankato, which is where I am located, and also in Edina. I'm here today because of the urgent need to pass the House File 3816. The bill would align with Minnesota's tax law with federal law regarding research and experimental expensing. Thank you to Representative Witte for leading this effort. The federal law now allows businesses to expense research costs in the year incurred, but Minnesota requires spreading these costs over several years, adding complexity and burden. This misalignment complicates tax compliance for businesses. We used to be able to do this, not now. Our firm works with 49 clients in rural Minnesota, as a testifier did today. Many of these small and medium-sized businesses investing in research to create safer, advanced products for our communities. The immediate expensing is vital to support our small businesses. It provides financial relief and empowers smaller businesses to invest in innovation. It attracts businesses. Aligning with federal law makes Minnesota more attractive for companies looking to grow. Stimulate economic growth. Immediate expensing fosters economic growth and competitiveness. By aligning with the federal law, we position Minnesota as a leader in innovation and economic development. I urge you to support House File 3816 to invest in a prosperous future for our state. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Yes, if you could stick around a little bit, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I'm just, maybe, I don't know if it would go to you as a CPA or to our nonpartisan staff. I'm trying to understand how the retroactivity would affect somebody filing. So if they go back to 2022, are they doing amended filings? How does that look?
You're correct.
Ms. Powers?
You are correct. We will need to go back and amend because of the federal law changes. So we would have to go back because we were amortizing these costs, and we would have to go back to that time period.
Thank Chair you. Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe to nonpartisan staff then, how does that look back affect future revenue? I'm not sure how that, if they're doing an amended filing, would there be a cost then to the state in the past, or does that get flushed out?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim. Yes, the revenue estimate for House File 386 does include
the retroactivity in the bill for the provisions that are being conformed to, and that is why the fiscal 27, the first year of the revenue estimate, that's why you see it front-loaded in the cost for this expensing amortization provision. We don't have the detail of, you know, for when you go back to 2022, how much of the total estimate, you know, is from that piece. But it's all lumped together in fiscal 27. But if additional detail is needed, I could reach out to the Department of Revenue and get those estimates.
Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. That I was just a little confused, too, because it's supposed to spur research and development, but now we're going backwards, and that research and development's already happened. So thank you for the clarifying, and thank you for answering about the CPA question.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. Any other questions? Representative Whitty, would you like? Representative Lee.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So are we in the member discussion portion?
Are we what?
In the member discussion portion
of
the
I
hearing?
That's what I just said, yes.
Okay, very good. Just wanted to to confirm. So I guess maybe this is a question for nonpartisan staff because, yeah, I don't know the answer either. So, you know, as I understand it, our R&D credit is supposed to be exclusively for companies in Minnesota. But if we conformed with the bill before us, would this open it up to other entities?
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lee, there are two separate tax provisions. There's the state R&D credit, and then there's the federal deduction for a similar range of research and experimental expenditures, and those flow through to the state through conformity. So conformity to the Section 174A changes in 3816 should not have an impact on the state R&D credit.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I guess, so my question is, right, if we adopt this really expensive bill, you know, we had a lot of discussion today about tax dollars staying in Minnesota and enriching the community here. My question is, like, are potential gains, would potential gains, you know, be targeted towards just Minnesota companies and communities, or, you know, would, you know, are we asking Minnesota taxpayers to subsidize multinational and multi-state corporations in other states?
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, I think the best way to answer that question is to say that for the deduction, which is different than the credit, so the credit's limited to research and research expenditures taking place in Minnesota. For the deduction, instead of that, the deduction is going to be in a portion share of the total domestic research and experimental expenditures that a taxpayer has. So there's no accounting under that, under the apportionment system for expenditures that occur in Minnesota.
Representative Lee.
Okay, yeah, thank you, Chair. So, you know, my point is, right, like this is a really expensive bill, and, you know, based on, you know, what we learned from Mr. Klayman, at least for the deduction portion, you know, we are asking Minnesota taxpayers to potentially be subsidizing companies that aren't here, that are potentially multinational, multi-state. And, you know, this is a very big ask because as you look at the revenue note, this is really, really expensive. And I know we're not on the previous bills because I know there was a claim that, you know, these costs to state revenues, you know, net out over time, but that's not necessarily true because, again, like this budget window is fiscal year 2029. We don't know what the budget will look like, you know, beyond 2029, so we also just can't assume that the costs incurred to pay for these really expensive corporate tax breaks, you know, will net out or, you know, will benefit the state later. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Other member questions? Would you like to wrap it up, Representative Whitty? Does somebody have a question over here? Okay, Representative Whitty.
Does Representative Gomez, or Chair Gomez, has anything?
Well, Chair Gomez?
I'm good.
Okay. Okay, if you want to wrap it up, then we'll go to, we'll lay it over and go to Chair Gomez for tomorrow.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for the discussion. I like to share stories. And this summer, a few of us on the tax committee got to go out to some of the businesses, some of Minnesota's best. And we got to tour them. And we got to hear from the CEOs, but we also got to hear from the people, the employees that they employ. And they really do want to invest in Minnesota. But we are falling behind. And what we heard is these companies might not be leaving, these 100-year companies, but they're not reinvesting in Minnesota. So a company that's bringing in $3.8 billion might have an additional $1.2 billion in another state for their R&D credit. One of the most proud moments when I first got up here was my very first year. First thing we did up here was do a tax conformity bill Chair Gomez brought forward. And I think it really helped all Minnesotans, and this will hopefully do the same by having these jobs and making Minnesota strong. We're falling behind, and this is an opportunity to kind of conform and help out our businesses. So thank you all.
Thank you, Representative Whitty. We will lay the bill over, and that is House File 3816. Okay, Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So tomorrow we're going to be hearing some bills. We're going to revert to talking about the fortunes of Minnesotans rather than corporations that are mostly from out of state. We're going to hear some bills. Hewitt Bill 3959, PTR targeting 4119, House File 3913 from Howard hiring state auditors, and a Joaquin Bill 3792, as well as Representative Baker's liquor posting bill, House File 3752. Look forward to it. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Madam Chair, and thank you so much, members. Anything else for the good of the order? Good government all the time. We are adjourned.